Hi, everyone. McElroy here with the podcast version of our live show from the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise. We had a ton of cars out there, as you'll soon hear. The Dream Cruise can get pretty noisy. And our house band for the night was none other than the Exhaust Tones, who opened the show for us. As with any event on location, there can sometimes be technical difficulties. And you'll notice our microphones were not always perfect, so we hope you'll be forgiving. What we did have, though, was a terrific lineup of guests, including Ed Welburn, Robert Gilardi, and the iconic Jim Wangers. So sit back and enjoy a sampling of what you missed if you couldn't join us live on Thursday night. This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 20 for Thursday, August 13th, 2009, Woodward Avenue, After Hours.
Well, I seem to hear this pain right near this plated thing. Look at my lavender car. The more you look, the sadder you are. There goes another crate of records for the king. And I need the cash. Cops are down, and I feel great when I'm on a date with my high beams on, because my lows are gone. Well, what's up with my clutch? All jammed, don't budge. Crab walk under the car. The more you work, the sadder you are. Think that I will now be eating sandwiches this week. And I need the cash for my car. And I feel great in the pouring rain with my wipers out. Hope the cops aren't out. With my high beams on, hope my lows are gone. Now do you feel that buzz? I think I get that buzz, because the engine shakes around, the motor mounts are busted out. Got to use the quarters that I save for laundry, and I need the cash for my car.
Here we are live at the Woodward Avenue Dream Cruise. Actually, it's not officially the Dream Cruise, is it?
No, 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 it isn't. You're looking live at the AutoZone, at the almost the epicenter of the Dream Cruise, or pre-Dream Cruise.
And we say that because the official Dream Cruise is Saturday, when this will turn into a complete madhouse. It's just a madhouse right now, but it'll be a complete madhouse on Saturday, and that's when this place will just jam up with more classic cars and spectators than any other automotive event in the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's almost, it's indescribable what goes on here. I mean, every kind of motorized conveyance you could think of, and usually a thousand that you can't even imagine roll by here.
Even in Detroit, the Depression City, we're probably going to get 80,000 classic cars to show up on Saturday, and at least a million spectators. I know in good times it's been 2 million people and 100,000 cars, with the economy down on its back like it is here.
Yeah.
It'll be down, but by no means out.
Yeah.
It's still a massive event.
It is. And it is. It's too bad it's on the same weekend as Pebble Beach, but, you know, they're polar opposite events, but both cool. This is sort of a grassroots event that started 15 years ago, kind of on a lark, and it turned into this groundswell of a movement that's lives to this day. Even as John mentioned, here we are in the Depression City, which is our new moniker.
At least we can laugh about it.
Yeah.
But on a day like this, you know, it's beautiful weather, all kinds of great car people. We're going to have a lot of good car people on this show today, talking about cars, the industry, the Dream Cruise, and wherever else we want to take the conversation.
Right.
It's our show, and we can talk what we want about.
Yeah, exactly. So are we going to talk about some newsworthy events right now?
Yeah, let's bring
officially introduced
Dr. David Welch in here.
Yes.
Dr. Hunter S. Thompson? Doctor and journalist?
I just made you that.
Well, that's like spies like us. Doctor, doctor, yeah. Doctor.
So the big news, I think, this week in the industry had to be the Chevy Volt and the 230-mile-per-gallon thing and, you know, the whole firestorm that stirred up.
Sure. Look, first day got on this thing, you're talking about 230 miles per gallon for this car in the city. And the headline I put on my blog for this was, Chevy Volt gets 230 miles per gallon in the city and only in the city. And look, this is going to be a quandary for anyone selling either electric cars, plug-in hybrids, range-extended electric cars like the Volt, which do use gasoline, but they get great mileage because mostly you're running on electric. And it's also going to be a quandary for the government because they're going to have to come up with a rating for the range, how many miles you can go on a charge, and for the fuel economy in the case of stuff like the Volt and for plug-in hybrids. They do much, much better in the city because you've got the regenerative braking that is recharging the batteries. You're not just pouring energy into the accelerator like you would out on the highway without as much recharge. So they do much, much better. The Nissan Leaf, for example, they're saying 100 miles of range in the city. I've been told on the highway it could be, if you're driving it just on the highway, it could be 50 or 60 miles range. How do you rate that? You don't know how people are going to drive them, if they're going to be using air conditioning and the variance in miles per gallon. If you drive the Volt just on the highway, you could get like 60 miles per gallon. And they're saying a composite rating of about 124, but you're going to have consumers who are going to be at anywhere from, say, 60 to 230. And how do you rate that so that people aren't angry at the car maker, the dealer, and the government?
Well, we've already named it the Smiley Mile Index.
I saw that on the site.
How many Smiley Miles do you get? Because you can't talk about gasoline. But my big thing about the Volt is, what the hell is GM going to do for the next 15 months, 16 months, before it's actually in the consumer's hands? I mean, you can't have these big PR spikes and then sit there looking at your watch. And
go here, dark. You can't go dark all of a sudden.
Here we are. They won't get in the consumer's hands till what, November of 2010 at the earliest?
I don't even think that'll be consumers.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be fleets and others. You know, as I've talked about before, I'd love to buy one of these things, but I think we're looking at 2011 at the earliest before real live consumers get their hands on it.
And as soon as
Jay Leno and Ed Begley Jr. get there.
Yeah. And as soon as GM said 230, Nissan comes out with 367
for the
Leaf. So it's chaos.
Can you imagine the OPEC meeting though?
Yeah.
Nissan said what?
Yeah.
Chevy said what? I mean, maybe this will hold gas prices down.
Yeah. Now, there's another issue here for electrics and plug-ins and EREVs, as they're calling them. They do the best in the city, right? That's where you get your best mileage or your best range. But if you live in a brownstone or an apartment in the city, you can't charge it.
Yeah. Where are you going to plug it in?
So if you have a garage with a juice box so you can charge it, you're out in the suburbs, ergo you must use the highway, so you're going to get lousy range and you can't really get that far. Very limited sales on this. I mean, look, I love the technology. This is great stuff. But I think it's going to be very limited until they can lick some of these issues because, you know, that's a big paradox right there. If you can actually charge it, you're out where you may be living out where you're going to have range anxiety, as they call it. In other words, you're afraid you're going to be out, you know, cruising around anywhere and suddenly the battery meter says you're low and you might be stuck.
Well, electrics are only going to be a part of the fleet. I mean, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to take over the world as the media, some in the media made it out to be. But, it's unfolding as we speak, but I'm concerned about what GM is going to do to keep the fire alive for the Volt for a year and a half.
No, that's real good. Of course, you know, they had this big press conference this week where they pulled the wraps off a lot of future vehicles coming out.
The new smaller Cadillac, a complete line of smaller Cadillacs to compete right up against the 3 Series.
Right.
Very impressive.
Also, a new full-size sedan that replaces It's really a DTS size car, maybe even bigger.
It's
than
bigger.
That.
It's all. It's pretty much the size of an S-Class, and it's going to be called the XTS.
Right.
And you're talking about that stuff coming to market by what, 2012? You know, this is absolutely vital because when GM came out with the first CTS, they did very well with it. The second one followed it up really, really well. It's a much better car. It looks great. They're getting people who haven't traditionally bought GM cars in there in many cases. But the STS, not really relevant. New SRX should help, but the old one didn't do that well. And the rest of the showroom is sort of irrelevant. And you go to an Audi or a Mercedes or a BMW showroom, and you've got a lot of models in there. Cadillac's momentum has stalled out, and they need the SRX to do something, and then they need these other new models to really pick it up.
They've got the CTS wagon, they've got the CTS coupe. The new SRX is a different class of vehicle because the old SRX was much bigger. The new SRX is very package size competitive with the Toyota and
Lexus RX.
But do you think the wagon and the CTS coupe are going to do that much? I mean, to me, like, sort of variants.
I think the wagon's going to do better than people think.
I don't agree. But I think from a buzz factor, it'll definitely help the brand. I think it's going to be a very niche vehicle, only because Mercedes and BMW, who have been at it for years, really don't go anywhere with a wagon. In fact, they're thinking of pulling the Mercedes wagon, I thought, or BMW one.
Well, the other thing that concerned me about some of the GM announcement is they seem to be veering into that, you know, nameplate shift. You know, they're giving Buick a small crossover, and it's going to be the same or on the same configuration as the GMC. And I started to read that, and my eyes started to glaze over. I felt like giving them a big time out, make sure that these things don't look alike, because
Buick's going to have a compact, basically a Buick version of the Chevy Cruze. I don't know how they're going to sell that. I mean, the past smaller Buicks, things like Skylark, that Skylark from the 90s, didn't do so well. It's going to call for a complete repositioning of the brand to have some of these crossovers. They've done well with Enclave. I mean, the Enclave has been a terrific success. It's a really nice vehicle.
It's
gotten
younger people.
But one of the reasons
it's so good is it's big. So you can have these long, flowing, graceful lines.
It has great lines,
and that's what Buick should have.
Yeah, there are cliches about it. As big as a Buick, you know. So it's going to be, you've got a big repositioning for this brand, and I'm not really sure exactly where they're headed with it. And I asked several GM executives out there, I asked Bob Lutz, I asked Susan Doherty, and they said, you know, this is a premium car for people who don't want to spend Lexus kind of money. That's not really a brand image. That's a market position. And I'm sort of still wondering here what the mood or the ambiance of that brand is going to be and what kind of message it's going to say, say to the people who might buy it and might drive them around. What do you guys think? I mean, what's Buick's message? I mean, it can't be old people cars anymore.
No, it can't be.
And it's not going to be just big cars anymore.
Well,
so they have small crossovers.
Ed Welburn can address that later.
Yeah, we'll have Ed Welburn on the show later, and that's a great question to put to him.
It is, actually.
We're having Ed momentarily.
Momentarily, okay.
How about Volkswagen buying 42% of Porsche? It's going to be absorbed. But then the other rumor is that the new unified group will be called Auto Union. I thought that was a pretty interesting rumor.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which as
great historical.
Yeah, as racing fans remember the fabulous Auto Unions in the 30s that raced against Mercedes in Formula One.
Yeah.
The German union workers are probably like.
Yeah. And then
union in the name.
That's where the four rings on the Audi came from. That's from Auto Union.
Yeah,
so
four different car companies.
Right. So if Porsche is going to be absorbed into Volkswagen, and they're talking about renaming it Auto Union, which would be pretty interesting.
That'd be pretty interesting. And the other thing that I find fascinating is that Martin Winterkorn, who has been running Volkswagen, is also going to become the CEO of Porsche.
Yeah.
And I don't know how he's going to do both jobs. I mean, you'd think that he's going to have to relinquish something at some point.
Well, Colonel Klink will say, tell him where to go.
Sergio Marchionne runs Fiat Auto, runs the Fiat Group, which has some other properties, some industrial properties like Case New Holland, you know, heavy equipment.
Right.
And now he's going to be the CEO of Chrysler.
Right.
Carlos Ghosn has run Nissan and Renault at various times, and he's doing that again. So, all these guys are going to have to do what Ghosn and Marchionne do pretty well, which is delegate and get other people to really perform and do the jobs right, and they're just going to have to set strategy and make sure the work gets done.
Okay, right. Chip Drake, our producer, has just informed us we're going to have Ed Welburn, the VP of Design from General Motors, on in a moment. Well, we got to thank some of the people who made us being here possible, and we're going to throw to that thank you right now.
This edition of AutoLine After Hours, live from the Woodward Dream Cruise, would like to thank the AutoZone Hobby Store, located at 33202 Woodward Avenue in Birmingham, Michigan, and its neighbor, two doors up, Tech Bench, at 33242 Woodward. Both businesses were extremely helpful and gave the program great support in the production of this live event. Also, a big thank you to the Exhaust Tones, our house band, for the evening.
Right now, Ed, it's great for you to come on AutoLine After Hours, especially at the Woodward Dream Cruise. You brought your own 69 Chevy Camaro SS down here that we'll go take a look at in a minute, but great having you.
Well, it's fun to be out here. Yeah. Beautiful weather, great cars, great company here. It's good.
viewers should understand that Ed inherited the mantle from two of the greatest designers that ever lived, Harley Earl and Bill Mitchell. And in my mind, Ed is the first designer to head General Motors Design that is in that class of those gentlemen. And so we're, as enthusiasts, you should be really happy that Ed's in charge of design, because he gets it and he inspires his troops to do great stuff. And I'll tell you guys have been doing fabulous work, Ed.
Well, thank you. I have so much fun doing what I do. I really do. And
designers have the best job in the business.
Absolutely.
Well, I think so. You know, I have so much fun, but what I really enjoy is the look in a designer's eye when you pick their design to go forward. That I don't care if it's a young designer right out of school or somebody who's been on the boards working for 10, 20, 30 years, they get that same look in their eye.
You know what's interesting? You know, I agree with Peter. I think you are up there with Earl and Mitchell, and the results speak for themselves. The stuff that's coming out of General Motors now looks really good. But you're doing it with essentially the same staff that you had before. So what's different?
Yeah, we're always bringing on new people, but it's a lot of the same staff. And, you know, I always talk about, like, the CTS coupe, who's done by a guy who's been with GM, you know, for over 30 years. You know, and it's just, for me, I just want to create the environment in which designers just feel free to create, come forward with ideas, more than even ask for. You know, his assignment was to do the CTS four-door sedan. He did it, and he had an idea for a coupe and just came forward with it. And that's the kind of environment that I like to work in, and I want all of them to work in as well.
But it's more comprehensive than that, too, because, I mean, design's got to work with manufacturing and engineering and purchasing to pull off the proper balance, and it seems, until you came in, and I think Bob Lutz, of course, had a lot to do with straightening this all out, it was just a matter of straightening things out, not necessarily axing a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It's getting the right balance. Bob came in, and he brought design and engineering together in a way.
Yeah.
The working relationship is great. I feel as though the best cars happen when design and engineering work together. There will always be tension between a designer and engineer.
Yeah,
but to get great proportions, you gotta work together to do
well,
it.
Well, and as we know, going forward, you know, no matter what the driveline is, design is still the ultimate initial product differentiator in the consumer's mind. Because they can say, well, I want green this, green that, and then they see a shape they like and say, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
So design is even more crucial going forward.
Yeah, and I think it always has been. People didn't always recognize it, but they thought there were other priorities.
Well, you know, I mean, come on, let's get real. You know, a lot of top management for decades in this town just thought cars are commodities.
Yeah.
Okay, you hit your numbers, you know, it does this, it does that, quality-wise or performance-wise, and that's all it's got to be. And there's a lot more emotion that's got to be in that.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about the product, and I even use that term product, but sparingly. Yeah. These are great cars, trucks, and crossover vehicles. It's just not a product. You know, these aren't refrigerators, they aren't appliances, they're emotional statements, I believe.
Well, as I've said before, they're mechanical conduits to our hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
And
absolutely right. Every car should tell a story, and it's the story of what it can do for you in your life.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't like the name, but the Cadillac Converge at the Detroit show showed you what an emotional body on the Volt platform could do. All of a sudden it changes everything.
Very different personality. Every car's got a personality. That's why a car can play a role in a movie. Not just, you know, Transformers, where it has a very obvious role, but in every movie, you know, they'd select the right car for to go with the right actor. Is it a sinister car? Is it a happy car? Whatever.
Yeah, but why is it that the hero in the super exotic sports car always gets caught by a bunch of bad guys in an old Mercedes sedan?
Somehow he can't outrun them.
It's like, he's got the coolest car, and the bad guys always catch him. Let's take a look at your car here, Ed. So, Ed, you got to tell us, what is this car?
Well, see,
what's the story behind the car?
Well, my 69 Camaro is one I've had for quite a few years, and more recently, I've leaned on it a little bit. You know, the brakes, I had to update the brakes and suspension and all that. I mean, it just really handles quite well. I grew up outside of Philadelphia in Berwyn, Pennsylvania, same town as Bill Jenkins, the drag racing guy. And I sent this car back there about 3 years ago. I just wanted him to touch the engine, you know, grumpy to touch it. So, you know, pulls in the shop. Next thing you know, he's dismantling the carburetor. He's rebuilding that. I've got great photos of it. It's been a couple days with him, and he just had fun playing with this car. So, you know, he's really known for his Camaro work, and it just kind of completed the vehicle to have Jenkins competition work on it.
No kidding. There's a name to say that's who did my end.
Yeah. But it's a fun car. When we started work on the new Camaro as a concept, I took this car into the studio and said, I'm leaving it here. I want you guys to be inspired by it, but I want you to beat this design with something thoroughly contemporary. So the car just stayed in the studio for a few months, actually, as they developed the concept car.
Oh, that's cheating. You're getting General Motors to pay for your car storage, that's all.
well, this is good for our viewers to see Ed. I mean, Ed's just one of thousands of people involved in this industry, in this town, that have their own personal car stories that are, you know, that's all part of the business. There aren't robots here in this business. You got to really love it. And Ed and his team and designers all over town, engineers, they all have something in their garage.
And you know, I really enjoy washing a car by hand. You're just out there with the bucket and a rag washing. You see so much in the design. I mean, you can walk around this car all afternoon and you see it at a certain level, but when you're there
washing it,
you see the fits and the finish and how all the parts go together
how the flow of the body panels are.
In fact, for all of us non-designers, this is the closest sensation we get to sculpting a car in clay.
I had the new Chevy Spark. Won't be available here for, you know, another year. I had one at home, and I'm out there in the driveway washing it. Then I took a photo. I had a friend take a photo of me washing the car, and we emailed it back to the designers in Korea that created the car, and they got a big charge out of me out there washing their car.
So why the 69 Camaro? What brought you to this? Besides giving it to Grumpy Jenkins to really
You know, the 68's cool and the 67, but the 69, it's just something, the tension that's in it, it seems leaner to me. I mean,
You always like Camaros, though.
Oh, yeah, I always like Camaros.
My personal favorite was the 68.
Yeah.
I like that one.
I also like the 71.
Yeah.
70.5, the Z28 with the split bumpers. I mean, that's a pretty cool car.
Split bumpers, split windshields. Would you ever do something like that again in a design?
Maybe split backlight, split window.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the technology's there.
Mm-hmm.
The cameras and all, you can do it.
I forget the name of the super vet that was used in Transformers.
Yeah, Stingray.
I mean, the new Stingray.
Sideswipe is what it's called.
Yeah, we need to see that in out in public, because that thing is something in person.
Yeah. Yeah, we should get it out, running around.
I thought you were going to bring it tonight, actually.
Yeah. You see, you're tempting me now.
So do you have other cars?
A couple Corvettes. Saturday mornings I'm out running around with SSR, picking up stuff. That's my little pickup. And,
I think I hear a performance theme in the kind of cars that you have.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, God, I can't wait to get a CTS-V coupe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I need to have one of them in there.
That thing is sensational.
The good thing is that there's the choices are really exciting. I like performance. I also like luxury. You bring that all together in one vehicle.
Well, and in fact, you guys had a big conference this week. Of course, General Motors did. You unveiled a lot of cars, and I especially like your XTS full-size sedan, because with all this talk of downsizing, and don't get me wrong, I like small cars. I like small, nimble, fast cars.
Yeah.
But I also like cars of heroic proportions. And that's one of them. That's a big sedan, and it looks terrific.
Well, thank you. And it's a lot of work in the wind tunnel. I mean, it is slippery. It looks slippery, and it is. And, you know, with some advanced technologies in the powertrain.
And on the opposite.
It's one of the cars I guess I'm most excited about. The world.
And on the opposite end, you have a complete... Okay, we got it.
We got some of the ambiance at the Dream Cruise.
I've got Italian horns too, but I'll leave that alone.
on the opposite end, you have a new line of smaller Cadillacs below the CTS to compete against BMW.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we do, and it's a little bit of it is public. And
you revealed them
and,
to the media. I mean, the media is talking about it.
And you got to do it right. You know? You really have to do it right. You can learn from cars that were done in the past that weren't done right, and I think our team has, and the homework that's going into this car, that car is going to be spectacular. I really feel good about it.
And tell us about where Buick is going design-wise. We've talked about that.
Yeah, I get very excited about Buick because, when you look at its past, in the 50s with Skylarks and Roadmasters, and then they maybe have took a dive, and then they came back with Rivieras and Electra. I mean, Mitchell did these terrific Buicks in the early and mid-60s. And
they still look good today.
They look spectacular.
Very clean.
Very good. They're very sporty and yet very elegant. You know, the sporty, elegant flow that's in the cars. And so I spent time with our designers talking about the great Buicks. And our youngest designers absolutely love working on them. It is hard to see a bad sketch of a Buick. They just love it because it is bold, it is dramatic, and it's very artistic. The flowing lines, it's everything's like an artist's brush stroke.
Yeah, flow is key word for the new Buick.
Yeah, and like the LaCrosse, that line that runs down the body side,
the sweep spear.
Sweep spear actually begins inboard of the headlamps, flows through the headlamps, down the body side, and around the rear and down. That's neat stuff. You don't do that with a T-square at all. I mean, you do that thing.
But you also showed a small, like almost a mini compact crossover. How do you do smooth flowing lines when everything's getting shorter?
Very carefully. Very carefully. And it's, it's not all done with computers. Most of it is. That's where, most of the work is. But fine art sculptors have got to have a role.
And again, it goes back to what we were talking before. You got to work with manufacturing, engineering at all to be able to build those shapes.
And I think they can do just about anything if you communicate with them early and not wait until the last second to throw the design over the wall to them.
Another car that you guys showed is the next generation Chevy Malibu. Very interesting car. Talk a little bit about, how you approach that design.
Well, today's Malibu is very successful. It appears to be far more expensive than it really is, and we kind of followed that philosophy. But with a car that I think is even more relevant in its size and proportion, very aerodynamic, I mean, just incredible numbers in the tunnel with this car. I mean, you'd never believe that from this kind of a mid-size sedan. And then really taking the interior to the next level of refinement and interior space. It's a bit wider, better shoulder room, and
what I found fascinating is just the way that you designed the car. I don't want to say that it's got an Audi front end, but it's more like an Audi than a Chevrolet in a sense. You've got the high, almost Bengal butt trunk. I mean, it's a much more sophisticated looking car than even today's Malibu. To my eye, the next generation looks $5,000 more expensive than the current Malibu, even though I'm sure the price will stay about the same.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, that was the whole goal. You look at it, Equinox is the same kind of deal.
Oh, well, the new Equinox, getting that transaction price up there.
Yeah, and then getting doing a bold front end.
Yeah.
And whether you're looking at a little Spark or the next generation of Avail that we're developing, or a Malibu or an Equinox, the face of Chevrolet is very consistent.
Yeah.
Ed, we've got to wrap it up here. I think we're going to go to the band again. That's our next transition. But thanks so much for bringing your car along
and talking
to both Seth. Peter
I gotta
and
go.
I.
I got to go. I got an early morning. Okay. I'm in virtual reality at 6 a.m.
They'll move. Someone will move their car.
Yeah. Hopefully you can get them moved.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks again, Ed. Yeah, take care.
Look out, Mom. There's a white boat coming up the river.
Performing for us later as well, but thanks you guys. Nice bridge into the second half of the show here. Appreciate that. But we're going to talk with Jim Hall right now of 2953 Analytics.
Oh God,
who was just on the show the other day. But since you're down here, talk to you.
You know, it's a great thing to come down to. It's a great event. I mean, the Dream Cruise is pretty cool anyway because the cars come to you. You know, and that's a hell of a lot if you like sitting in an aluminum lawn chair. Yeah. This is the place to be for the weekend.
Yeah,
seriously.
We haven't pointed out to the viewers that if you drive down, there's thousands of people tonight on their lawn chairs watching.
Sitting out on the road, just watching the cars go by.
Yeah.
And, of course, a lot of people just pull their cars up in different parking lots here and park them. So it's not just the cars driving by, but there's miles and miles and miles of parking lots of pretty cool cars in them.
Right. 16 miles from end to end, you know.
Right.
That's longer than Reptilicus. No one knows what I'm talking about,
which is
terrifying. In fact, I may not even know. There may not be such a thing. And this is great to do it at the AutoZone. But this place alone is sort of like a micro Dream Cruise on Saturdays every summer.
And I've only just learned this in the last couple of weeks, and I can't believe it that me, somebody who lives in this town, only just learned about this, so I will be coming out.
I mean, I see this guy here all the time, but because they're great cars. I mean, where else can you see a stout Scarab and an original Ford GT in a parking lot just on a Saturday morning? You know, no other place I know of.
No.
You know, you could sit at Pebble for a couple hundred years, and you would never see those cars drive by like that as you sat on the green out there on your aluminum lawn chair.
Yeah.
Right. Kick you out after a while. But
a lot of interesting people just hanging around here in the parking lot.
Yeah, just
right
guys,
now.
You know, just Ed Golden from Ford Design.
Right.
Yeah. And Moop, you know.
Buck Moop, from Ford Design, and Kip Wasenko, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The one downside of this is they'll let anybody here, even me. You know, if they allow me to be here, and I'm waving around the best bad car movie ever made, The Betsy. It's wonderfully horrible. I mean, I especially like when the guy who's supposed to be somebody from apparently Automotive News assassinates the Ralph Nader character by sticking his head in a power window. And it's like, oh yeah, this is our industry. There's no doubt about it.
That's right. In Detroit, we eat our roadkill.
Yeah. That's right. Well, wait. No, we eat it and then leave it as roadkill. Because you want it fresh.
Yeah.
So, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen at the Dream Cruise?
Oh, boy.
How about the guy riding inside the...
The, the bubble.
The single wheel.
The single wheel side. That was.
Wait. Describe that for our podcast audience. Yeah.
It's basically a hubless wheel.
Yeah.
And it's a device that has a motor that's turning around.
Wasn't that Sbarro that did
it's
that?
It's like Sbarro, but this is one where the guy sits in it like a motorcycle.
And
inside the wheel.
He's in the wheel, and the thing's probably about this tall, I think.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, how did he turn it? Because it would have to be balance only, since you can't articulate the wheel any other way.
Right.
It was, that's probably one of the weirdest. The other was still the 2000 Pontiac Aztec. I mean, I just remember its retina searing effect that it had, and people were screaming in abject horror, people dropping in vertiginous, retching horror. It was astonishing, and it was lime green with cladding.
So who was, trivia question, and this will go way over our viewers' heads, but there was a guy in the 60s who pioneered riding a motorcycle with the Corvette engine in the drag racing scene, and his nickname was the Michigan Madman, and we've been trying to remember his real name, because his real name was almost as famous as the Michigan Man.
I remember the bike, but I do not remember. I remember the bike because you'd see it at drag races. They'd run it out at like the San Fernando Drags.
Well, I saw it at Detroit Dragway. But
he was out there once, and this thing is just, you're like, that's a Chevy V8. And now you can buy these as a Boss Hog, which is.
But this guy in 1964, it was a sight to behold.
Yeah.
He was called the Michigan Madman.
But you can't remember his real name.
Can't remember his
real
name.
Okay, there, we're throwing it out to the audience.
Who can figure it out? I'm going to do a search.
They have access to the internets, you know, so they should be able to find it. Because the internets are a bunch of tubes. So the information somewhere is in a tube. God help us. 1960 Edsel. Now, there is a car you don't see very often anywhere on Earth.
Right.
And here, in the Dream Cruise, just puttering down.
Oh, yeah.
It's on the other side of the street. It's tough to see, but it's there. Believe me, I'm not making this up.
The red car with the white top over there, another 69 Impala, two-door.
No, actually, that's the 1960 Edsel.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Edsel.
That's the Edsel.
Okay. All I'm seeing is the window opening of the roof. Okay.
Remember, the Edsel look is here to stay, and the 1960 cars will prove it. That's advertising, okay? That is selling what you got. Because we don't have a car now, but in 3 years, trust me, this will be okay. This, to me, is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. The concept of a diesel 53 Corvette at one level is almost like itching powder on my skin.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, a diesel 53 Corvette.
Yeah.
Actually, that Edsel was the first Edsel of the 60s.
Yes, it was.
I remember that Citation commercial. The first Chevy of the 80s.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's cool. You know what? This is something that everybody should come and see.
I agree. Anybody who's a true car enthusiast ought to, heaven forbid the thought, take a vacation in Detroit.
There are other things to see here.
Yeah, there are.
And some of them are on the route, like the Hunter House.
Yeah. Well, you know,
Sliders.
I still think they should move the date up 1 week.
I agree. So it doesn't conflict with Pebble. I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
And every now and then it would fall out of phase, which was great.
Yeah, every,
I could see
every
them
4 years.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
But honestly, it should not be on the same weekend. That it is this wonderful thing where the car enthusiasts are sort of, they're at the ends of the U.S., and they're probably going to cause some sort of huge split in Nebraska, a huge chasm, that will probably, in the process, consume a lot of collectible cars in Nebraska. Those barn cars that are still unfound.
Well, Chip's given me the high sign to wrap it up. So, Jim, hey, thanks
pleasure.
So much for stopping by.
Good seeing you guys.
Good. Yeah, you bet.
See you later.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
We'll be in touch. Coming up next, I think we're talking with the designer of the 2010 Mustang.
I'll be there a little earlier.
So we're talking with Robert Gilardi.
Robert Gilardi.
And you're the designer of the 2010 Mustang.
I was one of the designers. I was a senior designer on the 2010 Mustang with a great team that included people that, you know, like Doug Gafka and Jay Mays. And, good design team.
So were you on the generation just before this?
I was on the 05 as well, and then I was asked to come back and work on the 10, so it was a great thing to return to it.
Do designers like to do that, come back to a design and say, yeah, I should have done this, or now I got time to go there?
Especially,
do that.
Well, I felt like I was coming home to, you know, to the Mustang, and I think especially if it's a Mustang, yeah, you definitely want to come back and work on it.
So what'd you do differently on this car? Talk about, I mean, from a thought process and some of the actual details.
Well, I mean, you definitely know that it's still a Mustang, and when you look at it and you see all the subtleties of the surfacing and the modern surfacing that went into this car, we definitely think it's a modern evolution of the previous generation. It still needed to be a Mustang. It shouldn't be a spaceship with a horse on the front of it. So that to get a lot of shape and sculpture in the exterior was definitely key. I also did the interior of this car.
Interior is a huge improvement.
Thank you very much. We're very proud of it. And the three things, you know, we wanted to do with the interior is add a lot of dramatic sculpture, just like the exterior, take away some of the linear aspects of it. Then we wanted to, every time we ran into a problem, we wanted to come up with a solution that made it more of a Mustang, not less. So you'll see things like the conical gauges that might remind you of something, you know, from our family tree, and the flow-through console that might remind you of something from Mustang DNA of the past. But the third thing, and probably most important, was to dramatically improve the fit and finish in the materials.
Right.
That was absolutely critical. And
Everybody seems to be getting that these days. I mean, I'm talking about the Detroit automakers who really let their interiors, you know, get cheap.
It was an afterthought for a while. It's clearly an afterthought.
Well, we knew that with the success of the 05, it was, you know, kind of a foregone conclusion that, you know, we would have some people that would want to emulate our success. So every time
you're talking about the Camaro and the Challenger.
Well, you know, whatever you want to bring up, sure. But every time we were looking and trying to make a decision on materials, we knew we had to not only go one step above, but, you know, two steps, three steps. So I myself am not only proud of the design theme, but also very proud of the execution and the fit and finish.
Mm-hmm. And now on the other side here, we've got this cool 39 panel truck,
that's
right?
That's right, yes.
This is yours.
This is mine.
And it looks to be original, basically?
It is. It's original steel. This is from California. My father actually found this at the Pomona Swap Meet, and he did some restoration work on it. And about 5 years ago, I purchased it from him and brought it here to its rightful place in Dearborn, Michigan.
Okay, how does the designer of the Mustang go to a 39 panel truck?
That's my problem. I like everything. I like all cars, anything from, you know, muscle cars to hot rods to, you know, vintage race cars. Much to my wife's dismay. But it's very fun to drive, and it'll soon share the garage with a 2010.
So you get this out on the road much?
I do, especially for the Woodward Dream Cruise. I tend to drive it as much as I possibly can. And I take it to, you know, all kinds of cruises around the Detroit area through the summer. You can fit a lot of chairs and coolers in the back, so it's very helpful.
What kind of motor does it have?
It has what you would typically would find in a California hot rod, where the flathead has been seized, so it's been replaced with the 350.
Oh, okay. So this thing's fairly quick.
It is fairly quick. Did require changing from bias plies to radial tires to accommodate the power.
I love the hubcaps.
And they're all original as well. They did have to be repainted, but just like the body, all the steel is original. It just needed blasted and reshot.
No kid.
Absolutely.
Well, that's
absolutely
the benefit of finding something like that in California.
Absolutely.
You know, where it hasn't all totally rusted out.
It's very, very solid. Very, very solid. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, a lot of us car designers, as you probably, you know from interviewing a lot of us, we all have, you know, a special cool car. We've got guys who have, you know, old, you know, Corvettes. We've got guys that have old, you know, Mustangs. So it's really a love affair.
Yeah. And way to go on the sequential taillights on the Mustang.
Thank you very much. You can tell that's a Mustang from about a mile down the road or more.
Yeah,
we're very proud of the LED taillights and the sequential. That to us was a signature Mustang feature for the back end of the car.
Well, it's certainly a signature Ford feature.
It's
which
a
used
Cougar.
To be on the,
it was originally on the Cougar,
well, actually,
right?
The Thunderbird.
Thunderbird.
Going back to, Cougar. I want to say, 63 or something like
right.
that.
And then they used those taillights on a GT500 at some point in time, so we decided to play some artistic license and bring them back.
The front end, too, especially
like
around
them.
The headlamps, looks a whole lot more aerodynamic than before.
Well, everything that we've done on this car, we're not only for appearance, we spent a lot of time in the wind tunnel working on things like the front splitter, the mirrors to reduce wind noise to get better, you know, aerodynamics. Even though this is a muscle car, that was still, you know, very cognizant to us, that we want to make it something that, you know, you're not afraid to go out and enjoy, that you're going to, you know, drop $10 every time you hit the gas.
Yeah, and when it's going down the road, it looks actually a little smaller than the previous model. It's interesting.
It's
deceiving. I mean, it's the same size, but you've done some design things that makes it a little more compact. Right.
Wind tunnel tweaks, yeah. I think, especially.
Wind tunnel tweaks, and especially not only on the front end, but also on the rear end, where we've taken and wrapped the corners around the edge of the car,
right.
Which was a sketch that was done by a manager, George Saradakis. And we all thought it was brilliant because not only does it shorten the car from the side view and give you that long hood, short rear deck, but from the back it makes it look even wider because it's wrapping around the wheels. So little tricks like that, adding a lot more shape and sculpture into it, again, makes it look smaller, makes it look more modern. And you can see in this beautiful Kona blue paint here how just
all
the shape catches the light. It's just really gorgeous.
I thought the last generation had a little bit of what I call droopy eye look to it. And that's totally been fixed with this new front end.
This one is very aggressive. We redid the pony on the front end as well. It's a new pony. And it's looks like it went to the gym. Lost a few pounds, and it's a lot more.
It's not a pygmy pony.
Yeah, exactly. And we, that basically was kind of describes the philosophy of the generation of what we did from the previous generation to the new car. Everything is a lot more sculptured, a lot more athletic and toned. It's like an Olympic runner in the starting blocks. Just ready to take off.
But you put some curves into it, too, the kick-up right behind the door.
We brought back the rear haunch. That definitely is something that's a Mustang DNA cue.
Yeah, that's
good. And it helps because, you'll notice that there's not anything on this car that is taken directly off of a previous one. We tend to look at this like, you have a child, and, it has a little bit of, grandma's, eyes and a dad's nose and things like that. So this really, to us, is the newest generation, the next chapter of our wonderful, uninterrupted 45-year family tree.
45 years, God, it's amazing the Mustang's been around that long.
What a run, man.
And it's certainly, an honor for me and the rest of the design team to be able to work on something like this. It's a lot of history that we have to be custodians of, and so we took it very seriously and did everything very carefully.
Well, Rob Gilardi, thanks so much for bringing by the 2010 Mustang to take us around, but especially the 39 panel truck, because that is just so appropriate for the Dream Cruise.
Right. Thank you for having me. Very nice to meet you.
Yeah, thanks much. We're with Jim Wengers right now, who Pontiac fans are going to know because you had a thing or two to do with the original GTO.
I guess you could say that. I was lucky enough to be at the right place at the right time. And the market was calling for that kind of a car. And as you remember at the time, it was right after GM had made the decision to withdraw
from racing,
from any activity involving motorsports. And at the time, the Pontiac was really in the middle of that. We were really dancing with a lot of winners, and we're using it very heavily in our advertising and our promotion. All of a sudden, our stage was propped right out from under us. So I got to say, guys like John DeLorean, a couple of his good assistants.
Bill Collins,
Russ G.
They
got together and they said, what would happen if we stuck a 389 in this little Tempest, which was supposed to have a 326.
And we say little Tempest, but it's a
by today's standards,
it's a big car.
Well, we called it an intermediate.
Yeah.
You got to say that, Pete.
Yeah,
at least we were
exactly
honest. It wasn't small. It wasn't compact, but it was an intermediate. Anyway, that's kind of how it all got started.
And to our viewers, Jim worked at Pontiac's ad agency, McManus, John, and Adams, and he was one of the guys responsible for the marketing of the GTO. It was some of the most fun stuff in automotive history. This guy was intimately involved.
And you were all
over time, Peter.
When Peter says advertising, too, you guys did
everything.
A lot of interesting marketing. We're not just talking about newspaper, magazine ads, television, and radio. You guys got into all different kinds of promotions.
A hit record.
We had an understanding management. Guys like Monty Knudsen, John DeLorean, even Pete Estes.
True car guys.
Who really supported us when we came up. And as you said, Pete, we had that great hit record, which actually we had nothing to do with, but boy, it sure was on time.
Little GTO. Wasn't it Ronnie and the Daytonas?
Ronnie and the Daytonas.
Yeah.
Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. And unfortunately, the rest of the market had sort of been asleep. And here we were out there with this car, and incidentally, when the car came about, it was actually illegal.
Because it was an option.
GM had a policy They said very distinctly, though, that no division could build a car with less than 10 pounds per total car weight per cubic inch of engine displacement. You didn't have to be a brain surgeon to figure out that a 3,500-pound car with a 389 cubic inch engine wasn't going to make that cut. So as you said, we had to release it as an option. And in effect, what we did is sneak it out. The car was in the hands of the dealers before the corporation knew we were building
it. It's better to ask for permission, forgiveness, than it is permission.
Beautifully said. Absolutely right. And, of course, this is even the funniest part. The corporation found out about it not from Pontiac, but from Chevrolet and Oldsmobile.
Well, because that was the good,
so ticked off about
that
it.
Was the good part of the heyday of General Motors. The war between Chevrolet and Pontiac was legendary, and
what made them great.
Yeah, Pontiac spent their whole time tweaking Chevrolet every chance they got.
John, he couldn't have said it better. That's exactly what made General Motors great.
There was a pirate flag flying over the Pontiac headquarters on Oakland Avenue. I mean, really. I mean, that was just the way it was back then.
We used to get asked all the time, aren't you guys afraid of Chevrolet? And, of course, DeLorean's attitude is, you know what? Let them be afraid of us.
Yeah.
And he was out to show it. You know? And
see, that's what's been lacking so much in this business is people with the passion to go after the product. Not a business plan, but the product, because that's what people get excited about and run to the showrooms to buy.
Well, that's when GM lost their way, because it was all about the business plan. It was all about the strategy.
And not just GM.
Yeah, just GM, but boy, they...
Yeah, but them especially.
But it was particularly true with GM, because, you know, in the early 70s, that was the strongest asset that GM had. Were those images of each one of those products. You knew what a Chevy was, the low-priced GM car. You knew what a Pontiac was, fun, excitement, performance, sportiness. You knew that an Olds was kind of the engineering car that always had the first of the new features. You knew that a Buick was every bit as good as a Cadillac, but nowhere near as expensive. And, of course, Cadillac was the luxury.
Yeah.
That was priceless to have those images so strong in the market, and unfortunately that's what they have proceeded to lose.
No, then they launched the X cars and it all went to hell.
Very well put.
So what do you think? You know, here GM and Chrysler have gone through bankruptcies. Detroit looks like, Ford looks like it's getting its act together. What's your overall outlook, Jim?
Well, I certainly have to respect Ford, you know, for what they did. They saw the reality of the cash flow. They went to the banks and got loans. Now, of course, they've got to pay back those loans. Right now, as a matter of fact, Ford's on trial, in my opinion. They've got to perform now because they have gotten out from under that government loan. Yeah. They haven't come with their hands out. But they've got to start showing some serious penetration now, some growth in the market with both GM and Chrysler on their knees, so to speak. You know, now's the time for Ford to perform.
No, that's a good point. This is the time to start making some of that money, because you're right, they still, their debt's down, but there's still a lot of it.
Yeah.
One of the things that really has bothered me, and I might add that one of the things that I'm very pleased about is the fact that Bob Lutz has been given some serious responsibility at General Motors. Bob is a real car guy. Just like we were talking about before with John DeLorean and the Bunky Knudsens, Bob Lutz has got some of that same kind of fire in his belly. He loves cars, and that's what it takes.
No, he's one of the icons, there's no question. The interesting thing about Bob is he brought design and engineering together. He fixed GM's product development process, which a lot of enthusiasts have no idea the behind-the-scenes work Bob did. But now he goes to marketing and everyone says, well, he can't do that. He's a car guy. Well, Bob spent most of his career in marketing.
Absolutely.
So this is a good move for GM. I'm not so sure about some of the players Bob has under him.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. Well, I can say that. You know, I'm kind of a malcontent. But, you know, Bob has great instincts. So.
Well, he's smart enough to know that it isn't going to be easy.
Yeah.
And who is more qualified to be identified with those new products than Bob? Because he's the guy that really coached them and brought them along.
Yeah.
You know, such great new product like that Buick LaCrosse, you know, like that Chevy Malibu, you know, like really some nice new iron.
Yeah.
that needs now, however, to be promoted. And I got to make this point. I am a little bit tired, frankly, of hearing about, well, I'll say it, the Volt. You know what? I can't buy the Volt. It's not here. I know we're going to have electric cars. I know we're going to have electric hybrids. I know we're going to have alternate fuel, but we haven't got them now. And GM needs to start talking about what they've got now. I want to hear about some Chevys. I want to hear about some Buicks, some Caddies.
Yeah.
You know, some. I think you're going to hear that very shortly.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a book here. What are you pushing here?
Well, I got to remember that I have a real nice book about the early days of the muscle car era.
Yeah, I've read this.
Glory days.
It's well worth the read.
Well, isn't that nice? But it's a story about when things were glory days here in Detroit, not only with GM, but with Ford and Chrysler, when we were doing a lot of right things, when America loved its cars and understood them. And one more time, images. Everybody knew what a Chevy or a Pontiac was.
Yeah. Well, Jim Wenger is, you know, one of the people, as we talked about, that made the Pontiac GTO come to reality. And we're seeing a number of them go up and down Woodward here. It's great having you on Autoline After Hours.
Jim, thank you.
Jim,
thank
great
you very much,
see.
Peter. It's nice to be with you. And John, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. We're talking right now with Steve Pasteiner, who knows just about more about cars than anybody I've met. You seem to have been involved with cars longer than anybody I know just about, Steve.
Well, my first word was big car, and my mother never forgave me for that. You know, she always expected to be saying mama or something, and I just said car. And I guess ever since then, you can call it an addiction or whatever you want to, you know, it's really... The love of the car is such that it gives you a feedback. Whenever you're driving it, it responds to you. Just like I can imagine the horses may have been to cowboys way back when. You know, when you're driving a car, it reacts and responds in such an cooperative way that you just, you know, you have to love it, you know. And the emotional aspect of a car, the beautiful lines, the proportions, and knowing that not only does it look good but perform well, I mean, altogether, that's got to be a source of love, you know. So that's essentially.
And more than a source of love, a source of income, right? I mean, you worked in the industry and continue to work in the industry.
Yes.
Give us a little bit of your background.
Well, I worked at General Motors and as was the assistant chief designer at Chevy One Studio and at Buick, and did quite a bit of work on the Buick Grand Nationals, the GSX, and all those type of cars. And I found myself going home and working on cars some more, which I do now anyway. And the idea of being able to draw a car and create it and actually make it happen is really a satisfying experience. So, you know, and then if you're complaining about the car you design and you build, you have nobody else to blame but yourself, you know. So that...
Tell us what your company has done with...
Well, it's a small prototype company and a design company. So we do work for some of the transplants now and their suppliers. We're working on some really interesting projects currently that I shouldn't talk about and I won't. And then we're doing some other vehicles that I can talk about and they are... Well, one of them, for instance, is a Ford V10 powered replica Duesenberg, and the gentleman who owns it or who will receive it has a real Duesenberg, but he prefers to drive something that is more reliable, a little faster, has better brakes, better handling. So it'll be two identical cars, one with a Ford V10, which is cool, and the other one is a real one. So it's a quasi legitimate in that sense, you know. And we're doing some highly modified Corvettes also for Alex Borla, the exhaust guy, and that should be a real cool car with an LS7. It's an early Corvette. And
your company's the one that put the 53-esque bodies on the C5.
That was slated to be the 50th anniversary vehicle, and in fact, GM was interested in that, and there were a number of executives who wanted it to happen. And then as time went on and time was running out, it just didn't happen. And so we ended up, by some agreements, we ended up building it. And And it was quite successful, and people like it, and it represents the modern interpretation of the original, you know. So it gives it the flair that has the original, yet you can drive it down Route 66 with air conditioning and memory seats and listen to Memory Lane, you know. So it's all cool in that sense.
Well, I know you because I always see you at Eyes on Design, which is a classic car show in town that's organized by car designers. To my knowledge, the only car show organized by designers.
And it's very design focused, and I've been doing the commentary there for 22 years, since the very first year. And what is really interesting about cars also, I think, is that there is no other icon of the 20th century that will pinpoint a time. You know, when you're looking at a Mustang, you know exactly it's the mid-60s, or a GTO. If you're talking about a 32 Ford, you know that it's the 30s and the Depression era, the post-war years, the optimism of a 59 Cadillac, for instance, how that represents the 50s. So anytime you mention, you know, a Barracuda or a Mustang or a Cadillac of a certain year or a Model T, you know, it clicks for an era, so it's a really nice milestone indicator for the 20th century was, really, and in that sense, what Detroit is, because Detroit helped it create, you know.
So what do you make of the Dream Cruise then? I mean, here you go, these classic Concours levels. This is kind of the people's car
show. I tell you what, I have a number of friends who went to Pebble Beach. This is for real, and they're saying next year we're coming to the cruise. He says, first of all, we don't have to walk. It's more interactive in the sense that the cars do the walking for you. And the people are so much nicer. They're so much friendlier. And it really is one big happy party. It's,
it's free.
It's free, but also, you know, the insecurities that go along with a high-dollar car and its ownership and so on doesn't happen here. You can appreciate a Metropolitan that just cruises by here and say, wow, that's cute. I remember when, so-and-so had one of those and we used to push it.
But also, Steve, I saw a few years ago somebody drove a Mercer Raceabout down the street here. I mean, you see museum-quality pieces come down the road here. I don't know where they get the courage to bring a car out in traffic like that.
Well, you know, sometimes if you don't treat it like some irreplaceable marvel, or then you are more relaxed in driving it. If you worry about it, that's when the accidents are going to happen, I think, you know. So. Besides, it's a car, you know. They have windshield wipers. You should drive it in the rain, you know. That's kind of...
So tell us a little bit about specifically, Peter got you talking a bit about that, but tell us about the car that you brought out here tonight.
Well, that one is actually a... In 1954, GM built a Nomad. It was called the Nomad, but really it was one of the three variations on the original Corvette. And what was called the Corvair was actually a Corvette fastback. Yeah. The Nomad was a Corvette-based
for the Motorama
station wagon. And then ultimately in the 55, 6, 7 series, they became Chevys. But the original one was based on a Corvette. So this is kind of a salute to that. It's not an exact copy or anything, but it's a modification, again, that represents it in today's terms. And we call it a sport wagon because the Nomad is a GM registered trademark. But I guess the owner can call it whatever he wants to, you know.
So, I mean, this looks like a combination of 53 Corvette with a Nomad rear end on it.
With a sport wagon rear end. And it's a little more practical. I mean, you can put a big square TV box in there and carry it. And golf bags can be fitted into a stock Corvette. So, really, it's not as much as a practical thing as a salute to a beautiful vehicle of a certain era that, you know, again, represents the 50s.
Steve, thanks so much for stopping by and talking about what you've done and are doing.
Well, thank you very much, and it was great to see you. I look forward to seeing you before the Eyes on Design, hopefully, and Peter, I click on you all the time.
Thanks.
Well, Peter, this has just been a great evening. The sun's gone down a little bit. It's changing the light, which changed the looks of the cars, which I really like.
And the pipes are getting louder.
And
the motors are getting bigger.
And we see fewer commuters coming up and down Woodward here and more classic cars. There goes a Starsky and Hutch. What's that, about a 78 Fairlane or something like that?
And an F-100 just went by Ford, beautiful pickup truck. It's a spectacular evening.
It's been a great show having so many people come by, show their cars, talk cars with us. But, you know, I'm almost kind of glad the show's coming to an end because I want to go out and look at more of these things.
Yeah.
So we've really got to thank a number of people who made this possible for us. We did that at the top of the show, but we'd be remiss if we didn't thank them again. Let's throw to that package, and then we're going to end up the show with the Exhaust Tones, our group of automotive journalists who have got their own band.
Yeah. Good to see everybody.
This edition of Autoline After Hours, live from the Woodward Dream Cruise, would like to thank the AutoZone Hobby Store, located at 33202 Woodward Avenue in Birmingham, Michigan, and its neighbor, two doors up, Tech Bench, at 33242 Woodward. Both businesses were extremely helpful and gave the program great support in the production of this live event. Also, a big thank you to the Exhaust Tones, our house band for the evening.
My baby says she's traveling on a one after 909. I say, I'll move over, honey. We're traveling on that night. I say, I'll move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Says she's traveling on the one after 909. Well, I beg you not to go, and I beg you on my bended knee. I said, you're only fooling around, only fooling around. Move over once, move over twice. Come on, baby, don't be cold as ice. Said we're traveling on the one after 909. Well, I got my bag, going to the station. And the railman said, you got the wrong location.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.